Step through the gateway and enter the universe of the Harkin Theater. This is episode 21. Chapter 19. After a modest feast and a night in Ravenpoint's most comfortable lodgings, the group thought it best to investigate Calron's activities, seeing as the dwarves were the first people, outside the Archduke, he had interacted with since his escape. Also, the village's fortress gates of iron-reinforced wood made an excellent foil for vengeful mountain men, though Gawain doubted the brutes would try again. And it was decided to allow Calron some leeway in the hopes that he would think his mountain men cohorts had succeeded in running off his pursuers and thus grow careless. Either way, a day's recuperation in the village was most welcome, and each member of the group chose a direction to follow in their search for clues as to Calron's intentions. Thasgar, Ablui, and Gon went to the smithies and forges. Taking Glink on his shoulders for company, Clough scaled the high timber walls of the village to spy the surrounding terrain, then spent the afternoon foraging for herbs. Throughout their visit, Gawain was occupied with his newfound talent of fluency in the clan talk, and puzzled over what might have happened to cause this strange phenomenon. Flayna shared his bewilderment as well as her unspoken worry over the effects of everything he had been through. The crystal from Durbriag, travel to the other world, battles with demons. But decided it wouldn't do either of them much good to brood over the unusual discovery. Besides, it was obvious from the cheerful attitude of the hosting dwarves that he was quite popular. His fluidity with the clan language, as well as common dwarfish and all its nuances and colloquialisms, becoming apparent. This popularity made interacting with the villagers most enjoyable and came in unexpectedly handy when they found a newly drafted map, scripted in dwarfish, of all the roads leading to the outpost villages and their applicable problem spots for supply wagons, ruts, fords, and winding areas, a listing of area game and fish, and most important, a head count for the more dangerous creatures. Mountain lions, grizzly bears, poisonous snakes, and so on. The map also revealed a trail that branched off the westbound road and followed a river down to the Dread Mire, though its information on the swampland was sketchy at best. One marking near the marsh area was a cause for concern, a single name of something neither Gawain nor Flayna had ever before heard of.
Hillmen?
Upon inquiry, they found out that Hillmen, a newly discovered beast, were a four-fingered, coarser,
if such was possible,
breed of mountain men, though somewhat smaller, not quite as intelligent, brutal, extremely territorial, and had a tendency to kill any creature for food, including humans. They had not been seen anywhere beyond the immediate area surrounding the marsh, and as far as anyone could tell, did not venture outside their territory into thicker forest or higher ground. a beast that existed on instinct and fear, a fortunate circumstance for the dwarves that first encountered them during a trip to collect lamp fuel from the various bubbling pools of tar and raw oil scattered within the outskirts of the marsh. The giant brutes had been so shocked at their first sight of such stunted men that they had run off with terrified screams as if they had seen evil spirits. These facts were carefully noted in the case of having to enter the marshlands. Then they turned to more pleasurable activities with which to while away the remainder of their day. Gaewon spent a few moments with his crystal at a predetermined time, communicating with Trimble about Calron's suspected whereabouts. What he received in reply was that Chania's ship had arrived, and she waited for more definite plans concerning the manhunt in order to decide on a destination for her ship and her sea troops. With matters still hanging and nothing more to be done, Gaewon put aside any further deliberations about Calron and sought relaxation. Being so close to her childhood home set Flayna to describing to her new husband all the people with whom she had grown up, as well as the livelihood of the village.
We started with only six families.
Six.
And there were hunters. Hmm. Some of us farmed.
Naturally.
We later had fruit and vegetable preserving, and of course some trading.
Yeah.
As the afternoon waned, Clough, looking pleased with himself, returned from his foraging and proceeded to cut, sort, and bind his finds on the veranda of the village's inn, while Gaewon's mudcat wardmate supervised. Covered in dust and soot, Thasgar, Gon, and Ablui came back from the forges and a look in one of the ore mines, and after sharing information of Calron's unsuccessful attempts at breaking his shackles, promptly ordered up hot baths where they spent the last hour of the day splashing, cavorting, and generally making nuisances of themselves in the inn's bathhouse. Hearing the fuss and uproar, Gaewon, Clough, and Flayna decided to investigate and found their companions in the midst of a major water fight, each man armed with a wooden bucket, tossing hot water in torrents at the others holed up in their respective tubs. After a few moments of verbal disapprovals that were ignored, the dwarf and bath attendants had apparently decided it would be wise to let the men have their fun and, to avoid their drenching blows, stepped out for a short while. Gon let fly the contents of his bucket into Ablui's face.
A mighty blow from Fortress God!
Then, while the priest shook the water off, the bowman tossed his bucketful into Gon's face. Gon reloaded his bucket, and at a wink from Ablui, they hurled both their loads at Thasgar, who fell back into his tub. Clough leaned against the door jamb, crossed arms, and smiled.
It seems the wet nurses have left the children unattended.
What? I'll show you a wet nurse.
Gon refilled and let fly at the elf, barely missing as Clough ducked out the door.
Wow.
Flayna wasn't sure whether to laugh and risk getting wet or follow Clough's example. With round, gold eyes, Glink peered in at the tubs and twitched whiskers anxiously, then quietly padded back outside, clearly uninterested in getting wet.
Ho-ho! Dangerous territory in here! Only for those who are dirty!
Gon pointed an accusing finger.
And he's dirty!
Before Gaewon could realize the trouble in which he was about to be immersed, four hands grabbed him and pulled him toward a tub. Fortunately, Flayna took a hold of his ankles and prevented him from being completely soaked, Gaewon ending up with his head and neck held under the steaming water while she tugged for possession of him from Thasgar.
Thasgar!
The archer relented with a grin, allowing Gaewon to come up for air, then turned him over to expose his face.
Hand me your blade, Flayna. This boy needs a shave.
Gaewon flailed helplessly, his buttocks on a precarious balance at the end of the tub.
Let me do it. I've an idea.
Hold still.
Flayna!
Rivulets of warm water dripped off his face and several days' growth of beard.
What's What's going on?
Clough reappeared in the doorway.
The wet nurse is back.
Get some soap on his face.
Thasgar followed her order dutifully, catching a soapy brush tossed from Obluie and rubbing it vigorously over Gawain's cheeks and chin.
Ow! What are you doing? Not so hard.
Skin's getting a little tender there. Just because he's married now, he thinks he can go soft on us. Starting to look like the wild men of the north.
Gon ignored the fact of his own ample beard, but then, like his father, he had worn his beard since younger days so as not to be mistaken for a child by the unobservant. The clean-shaven appearance was a practice that had first been adopted by the earlier warriors of the reclaimed kingdoms as a means of clearly setting themselves apart from the wandering tribes of wild men that had once roamed the old lands. After the last of the reclamation battles that declared the boundaries of the realms and banished the wild tribes beyond the northern mountains, this custom spread among the nobles as a means of demonstrating sophistication and education. As the civilized society became more firmly entrenched, however, such etiquettes had grown acquiescent. The state of one's facial hair no longer crucial. Yet the clean-shaven appearance was still common among the learned men, philosophers, royal courtiers, teachers, mages, and such.
Easy, Thasgar, easy.
I'll get you.
But don't let go of him.
Flayna didn't want to push Gawain's ire too far as she reached for his dagger, unsheathed it, and tested its edge.
Mm-hmm.
Sharp as ever.
All right, hold him still.
His bath buddies naked in their tubs, Thasgar considered the social delicacies of the situation.
Clough, come grab a hold.
What? Clough, what are you doing? Are you mad?
Certainly. Mad over you. We want to keep it.
Enjoying Gawain's panic as he desperately tried to wriggle free from their grasp, Thasgar decided to have some more fun.
We've decided your nose is too long. Hold still, or she'll miss and shorten your neck.
He clamped fingers over Gawain's nostrils as if to hold it up straight for the blade.
Ready for your stroke, Lady Flayna.
Let me go, you wild-haired arrow molester.
Hold still.
Flayna moved close with the dagger and started shaving his cheeks, carefully avoiding his chin and mouth.
I don't believe this.
Haven't you always wanted a wife who would care for your every need?
Wash and dress her.
Not with warriors holding my nose.
An added luxury.
After many more scrapes of the blade, they finally finished the task, Thasgar and Clough ceremoniously dunking Gawain's head one last time to rinse off the soap, then helping him stand up.
Are you quite through now?
He jerked arms free, his face dripping, his tunic soaked across his chest, then discovered each of his friends inspecting his face with interest.
Very good, Flayna. Very distinguished looking.
Agreed.
Looks like a goat.
A goat?
Gawain felt his face and discovered where she had left hair around his mouth.
Where's a glass?
Spying a candle sconce on the wall near a window, he stepped over and inspected his image in its reflector. What he saw reminded him of his experience in Paul's world.
I look like Brynth. Sort of.
Yes. After you described him, I wondered how you might look with such a beard. I'll shave it off now.
No. Gawain held up a hand as he stroked the bristly goatee with the other.
No. I rather like it.
You want to keep it?
It does look nice. It makes you look mysterious.
Just as long as he doesn't smell like a goat.
Speaking of which...
Thasgar winked at Clough.
Perhaps we should take care of that too!
What? And before the enchanter knew it, four hands stripped off his boots, dragged him across the room, and tossed him sideways into the tub with guns. As the enchanter came up for air, he found the dwarf eyeing him with mock disapproval.
Yeah, you gonna bray like a goat too?
The enticing idea of a hot water bath with her husband sent Flayna to find the attendants, while Thasgar, Gon, and Ablui finished up, redressed, then helped Gaewon remove his wet tunic and breeches.
I'll get you, fellas.
Clough stood guard outside, giving the couple the luxury of privacy together. Traversity, Demons and Demigods, Part 1. Sound plays of the second novel were written, recorded, directed, mastered, and produced by Kurt Paul Hotelling. Copyright 2024. Character voices for Episode 21 are performed by Richard Hammer, Darcy Aradell, and H. the Great and Powerful. The Sextology of Novels are available through Amazon.com, on Kindle Books, can be ordered at your favorite bookseller, or can be purchased directly from the author. Merely submit a request to our email. The wonderful music for this episode of the Harkin Theater was composed and performed by the ensembles of Mocha Music, Evan McDonald, and licensed by PremiumBeat.com. Public domain music performances are licensed under Lieber Creative Commons. Sound effects and original Foley provided by freesound.org, Cusp Studios, and the BBC Library. This was recorded on location in the universe.